This is Recovery Radio, the first radio show in Rhode Island to offer useful information for the purpose of helping men and women suffering from alcohol, drug, and other addictions. Recovery Radio's goal is to raise awareness about the services and organizations available in the state dedicated to improving the outcome of those with addictions. Recovery Radio, hosted by John Tassoni and presented by Phoenix Houses of New England. Now, John Tassoni.
Welcome to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassoni. Sarah Dinklage is in the house, and Sarah is the Executive Director of the Rhode Island Student Assistance Services Program here in Rhode Island. And welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Why don't you give us a little bit of a background? It's been a while since you've been on, to let our listeners know all about the student assistance.
Well, Rhode Island Student Assistance Services, in partnership with the Department of Behavioral Health, Developmental Disabilities and Hospitals, and local school districts, has been providing school-based substance abuse and mental health prevention and early intervention services since 1987. We are in 25 school districts, 44 secondary schools. And these services take place right in the school where young people have easy access to a specially trained counselor who can provide them with education, provide comprehensive assessment, group counseling, support groups, one-on-one counseling, and referral for treatment when necessary, and case management and follow-up. In addition, student assistance counselors put on monthly awareness events for the entire school population. They do classroom presentations and a whole host of other activities. So it's a program that's based on the premise that we don't need to wait till people are addicted, overdosing by drugs, or dying by suicide, that if we reach kids early on, before their substance abuse and mental health problems become chronic and severe, we can really change lives effectively and prevent some of the tragedies, many of the tragedies that occur today.
So you said 25 school districts and 44 secondary.
Yeah, and those are middle and high schools, half and half, roughly.
But we have more than that. How come?
We have more than that, and we are not in every school. It's really a matter of funding. This program started in 1987 with enabling legislation, which involved raising the cigarette tax by a few pennies, and that increased tax went to fund a pilot student assistance program in four high schools, and eventually it expanded to 44. 2 years after that, in 1989, former Representative Russell Bramley passed legislation to expand student assistance to the middle schools with funding from moving violations. So when you ran a stop sign, got paid a fine, that would go into an account, and that's what funded the middle school student assistance program. The state has done away with that funding mechanism, and we are now funded through federal block grant dollars through the Department of BHDDH. So, and those dollars are limited, and not every school is not covered at this point. So it's certainly expanded from its beginning, but we are nowhere close to being in every school.
Let me ask you this question, Sarah. What would your thought be if there was legislation to put some sort of tax on alcohol to use it for funding?
I think, you know, an alcohol, dedicated alcohol tax to prevention and treatment would be very effective. I know it's been talked about in the past. I'm not sure where it went. I don't think anywhere, obviously, but that would be a very effective way of raising funding. Similar to, you know, dedicating the fines for moving violations or speeding violations for community coalitions.
I think what people don't realize until you start talking turkey pertaining to Rhode Island and being number one in the country with substance abuse. It's always what always seems to be the caboose on the train instead of being the leader. And there's so many issues and peer pressures in high school and junior high today than it was before when I was growing up. I can't say when you were growing up because I think you're a little younger than me. But the point being is that when you see the issues that we have in this state with young adults and adolescents, and it progressively is getting worse, I can tell you in my hometown, they got rid of the student assistance person there, and then they were in trouble. You go there with a solution to the problem, and we don't have money. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's all BS.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so little money
right.
for such a big impact on kids' lives today.
Right.
It's ridiculous for any school district to say it's all about funding, because it's not.
Yeah.
There's so much wasted monies in these budgets where if, in fact, you needed to have help, it's right at the tip of your fingers.
Right. Well, what I tell schools districts is school districts are not in the business of preventing substance abuse. That's mm-hmm. that's not what they're there for. We are only in the schools because drug and alcohol use and personal problems, mental health problems, family problems interferes with a child's ability to do their schoolwork, to attend school, to graduate, and you know, perform to their academic potential. So I always tell schools, if this wasn't connected to the work that you're doing, there would be no need for student assistance programs mm-hmm. right in the school. It's the student assistance program model is really based on the employee assistance program model that's been so successful in industry, where you have private businesses that recognize they lose money when their employees drink, drug, and have personal problems. They lose money because they're out of work. They lose money because they're having to train and retrain mm-hmm. new employees. Mm-hmm. So the model of student assistance really takes that and applies it to the school setting. That, mm-hmm. You know, we were talking earlier, school districts are very concerned, rightly so, about standardized testing and test scores. And, you know, it doesn't take a research study to know that when students are under the influence of marijuana or other drugs right in school, they're going to perform less well on those tests.
But it's not all about testing.
No.
think this is where we lose focus.
Absolutely.
This is about bringing kids up today to be productive citizens of Rhode Island.
Right.
And to be focus their lives on doing something other than drinking and drugging.
Right.
We're number one in the country. What, in fact, these people are not getting? I don't get it.
Right. And there's so much that can be done early on. Student assistance program model, again, because it's right on site, is a consumer-friendly program. When I say consumer, I mean it's an adolescent-friendly model. I used to work in an outpatient clinic years and years ago, and one of the things I became very frustrated with is having to wait till kids got in enough trouble, got sick enough, in enough trouble with alcohol and drugs to come to my attention behind my desk in my outpatient office. And so when the opportunity came up to establish a program right in schools where you could reach kids where they spend a great deal of time early on, certainly identifying those kids that need treatment and getting them help, but making sure they make the appointment, get the appointment. A lot of times it's a whole process of, first of all, motivating the student to want to change, and then, even tougher, motivating the family. A lot of times, right. I can't tell you how many times we get to the point with a young person where we say, you know, where they agree to get help for their cocaine use, and you're like, whoa, that's a breakthrough. You bring the parents in, and they're like, oh, you know, minimize, not that bad. We're not taking this child to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So it really takes a lot of skill and persistence on the part of student assistance counselors who are there with that child in ninth grade, seventh grade, then again in ninth grade, then again in 11th grade, and it sometimes takes that long to finally get them into treatment.
Right. I want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back, because
okay.
I want the young adults to confide in these student assistance people rather than their home.
Right.
You'll listen to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Sean Tassone. We'll be right back. Phoenix House is a proud sponsor of Recovery Radio, a national nonprofit leader in the treatment of drug and alcohol addictions. Phoenix House provides comprehensive care for medically monitored withdrawals, available in the Rhode Island and now in our new facility in Quincy, Massachusetts, to residential treatment, outpatient treatment, and recovery housing for adults and for teens. We offer residential treatment with academic services as well as outpatient care. At Phoenix House, our professional staff is committed to helping you achieve a better way of life through recovery. Major insurance plans and credit cards are accepted, so give us a call at 1-800-DRUG-HELP. That's 1-800-378-4435, or go online and visit us at phoenixhouse.org. Take your first step to the path to recovery today at 1-800-DRUG-HELP. Phoenix House of New England, accredited by the CARF, the Commission on Academic and Rehabilitation Facilities, is a national standard of excellence.
This is Recovery Radio. This is John Tassone on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassone. Sarah Dinklage is in the house. She's the executive director of Rhode Island Student Assistance Services. And welcome, Sarah. And thank
you
for
great to be here.
Thank you for coming on today. And I love your program. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Thank you.
Just we got to get other people to love it, love it,
yes.
Love it, love it, and get the student assistance people back in the schools. Sarah, what are you seeing, or what is your staff seeing in high schools today?
Well, still marijuana and alcohol are clearly the drugs of choice, no question. Nothing else comes close. But we are also seeing an increased, and this has been much in the news, availability of prescribed opioids. These are drugs that kids get when they get their wisdom teeth out, when they have sports injuries. That's the most, you know, the easiest way, the most frequent way that young people get their hands on these drugs. And then we're also seeing an alarming increase in the accessibility of heroin, the more dangerous heroin, fentanyl. Now we're not seeing a huge problem at this point at the high school, but it's when they get out, those kids who are become addicted to prescribed opioids, it's a very easy switch over to heroin in college and beyond or after high school. So the drug trends change to some extent, but marijuana and alcohol abuse are constant. You know, marijuana may be rising. Marijuana certainly rising, and we're number one in the country. And so these are challenges that we face. I think that by having the presence of somebody in the school that students can go to confidentially. So student assistance counselors are not employees of the school, but they are completely integrated into the life of the school. So they're visible at sports events, musical events, and students will come to them and they can talk confidentially. So it doesn't become part of their educational record their teachers aren't necessarily going to know, and unless there's a duty to warn, a young person can refer a friend, can refer themselves for their own drug and alcohol use. And another important population that we reach are a group that's at risk, are children who are living with substance abusing, addicted parents. This is a population who is at risk for, you know, developing problems, both drug and alcohol and mental health problems later in life. And student assistance counselors are there, again, to educate, outreach, provide support groups, and refer for help.
You know, that's one area where I'm baffled by. When I first got involved with Phoenix House and we were up at Walnut Lake and talking to the kids about the substances they're using with their parents. Needles.
Yep.
Marijuana. Pills. And most of all, alcohol. It just, as a parent and as a grandparent, mm-hmm. I just cannot fathom that.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to imagine. But there are parents, and more than you'd like to think, who will get high with their kids, or even if they're not directly using with their kids, turn the other you know, turn away and overlook the party that the kids are having in the house, dangerous behaviors, at-risk behaviors.
But you look at some of the high-profile cases we had in this state over the past 18 months or 2 years. I'm like flabbergasted. These smart people having parties at their house where there's alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
These smart individual high-profile people. Like, ladies and gentlemen, what the hell are you thinking?
Right. Well, a lot of times, and I can't speak to any particular cases, but, you know, it is an issue of addiction in the family. So, and with addiction comes a level of denial. This isn't a problem. I can handle it. My kid can handle it. I abused drugs and alcohol when I was young, and I'm okay.
Yeah, right.
That kind of thing. And so it's just it's an ingrained part of our culture. And, there's a perception.
That's a good word, perception.
Yeah, lower perception of harm. I mean, that's what happens. Kids will start to use when the perception of harm is low.
Mm.
So if they don't think marijuana is a problem, if, you know, grandma's smoking it to help her with the cancer pain.
I want to stop you there because that's what we're hearing.
Yeah.
When we go in to do training, we're hearing, well,
it's
okay for my grandmother to smoke it. Why can't it be okay for me to smoke it?
Yeah.
But little do they realize that
it's different.
The medical marijuana is different from the street marijuana.
Right. And so, you know, with these policy changes and it's a challenge for people in prevention and treatment because you have to do a whole, increase in education and get the word out. Mm. You know, we've been relatively successful at reducing tobacco use and smoking because
No doubt.
Mass public health messages, media attention, education in schools, you know, smoking cessation programs. We have lowered the risk. We have lowered smoking among youth and adults.
Well, that being said, the people that are driving the legalization of marijuana are who?
I know.
The cigarette companies. Tobacco companies.
Yeah, they're lined up waiting.
Can't wait to get their hands on their machines. They're not running
right.
Making cigarettes, so they figure their machines can start running making marijuana.
Yeah. So we do have to learn from how the field combated smoking and get out ahead of marijuana. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's going down that path of legalization, decriminalization, we have to do a much, much better job at having a clear, consistent, and accurate public health message. Mm. It has to be like we have to really that needs to be in place ahead of time. Let's not wait till we're in a situation where, you know, like with nicotine, people are addicted and dying. Let's get out ahead of it.
Right.
And, you know, message has to be clear and it has to be accurate because kids have a nose for, scare tactics and you can't say anything that isn't true.
Right.
You can't make stuff up. They'll catch it right away. They're on the internet. They know what's true. And it's about relationships.
Mm.
Really is. That's what you have to do, establish those bonds.
I want to talk about that when we come back to relationships, number one, and number two, what's really out there. You'll listen to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassoni. We'll be right back. Take your first step to the path to recovery today. Call Phoenix House at 1-800-DRUG-HELP. A national nonprofit leader in the treatment of drug and alcohol addictions, Phoenix House provides comprehensive care for adults to medically monitor withdrawal services available in Rhode Island and our new facility in Quincy, Mass., to residential and outpatient treatment and recovery housing for teens. We offer residential treatment with the academic services and the outpatient care. At Phoenix House, our highly skilled professional staff is committed to helping you achieve a better way of life through recovery. Major insurance plans and credit cards are accepted, so give us a call at 1-800-DRUG-HELP. That's 1-800-378-4435, or go online and visit us at phoenixhouse.org. Phoenix House of New England, accredited by the CARF, the Commission on Accreditation and Rehabilitation Services, a national standard of excellence. Phoenix House of New England, a proud sponsor of Recovery Radio.
This is Recovery Radio with John Tassone, improving the outcome of those with addictions. AM 790, Talkin' Business.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassone. Sarah Dinklage is in the house. She is the executive director of the Rhode Island Student Assistance Services Program. And thank you for joining us today, Sarah. A lot to talk about in the schools today. A lot to talk about trying to get adolescent children on the right path. There's so many obstacles in today's and so many distractions of our students to go off the beaten path. You look at professional athletes today, you look at actors and actresses, and you see the assessment that our kids are looking at when they only get a one-game suspension or a two-game suspension for DUI. But then you look at Tom Brady supposedly taking air out of a ball, and he gets four games. Yeah. There's no set standard on the message that's being sent out to our young kids. And a lot of it has to do with the leadership of these organizations on taking a hard stand, and the unions should take a harder stand by some of the programs and some of the tests that these men and women have to take. And I see it all the time because, you know, you look at our young kids today, and, you know, they ask, you know, who's your favorite athlete? Well, A-Rod. Mm. Well, you know, what did he do?
Right.
You look at, you know, some of these other professional athletes, football players. You know, they hit women.
Yeah.
They go from four games to one game suspension. It's out of tilt.
Right. And the media has given a lot of attention, and there should have been attention paid to those athletes that were assaulting women and killing people and using drugs. But they should give equal attention, and this is where the athletes themselves and the leagues should step out and really promote that most athletes are not treat women with respect, and most athletes are not using drugs, and that, you know, and that, because you're right, the children, kids look up to those people. We have a program called VASA, Varsity Athletes Against Substance Abuse, and we take varsity athletes in the high schools who everybody looks up to, they're the cool kids, and we ask them to take a pledge to be alcohol and drug free. If they're not going to do it, they can't be in the group, and then they go to the middle school and make presentations and promote a drug-free lifestyle, and here I am, you know, star of the football team, and I don't use alcohol and do drugs. So it's really getting that message out and making that the standard, as opposed to, you know, all the negative stories that come out. It's important for people to know that goes on, but people need to know most athletes don't.
But that's good in the high school, junior high level. You look at, and I'll tell you just a quick story. When I was with another organization before, Phoenix House, we were going to buy a place up in Springfield, Massachusetts, and the National Hockey League came with us to look at it. There were seven homes or seven facilities on this big campus. It was like a college campus. The National Hockey League wanted to take five of those facilities for 5 years and lease them right on the spot.
Wow.
So the professional athletes today have to perform, whether they're hurt or not, with substances that have to make them go out there and to perform. Because if you have someone like Tom Brady, who's got a bad shoulder, can't throw the ball, but we'll juice him up so he can throw the ball. He is the crowd draw.
Yes.
He is the NFL. The same thing with hockey. Same thing with basketball. Same thing with soccer. The society today, it's a lot different than it was 20 years from now.
Right.
It's all about the money. It's all about marketing. It's all about getting people involved, you know? And I kind of, like, scratch my head, too, about, and I was thinking about this the other day when I'm watching NASCAR. How many of those guys that are not feeling well but have to get out there and perform and drive a race car at 150, 160 miles an hour?
Right. And then do we care about these people when their career is over?
Correct.
You know, people argue, well, they're making a ton of money, mm-hmm. so that's that. But, yeah, no, it's pervasive. I don't know how you tackle that problem with, the professional athletic teams.
Yeah, because it's all about the money. It's not
right.
about the individual.
Right.
And what's going to happen when that particular individual retires mm-hmm. and they're hooked on the junk and they can't get off the junk. I mean, they did a story in the Providence paper about Vin Baker the other day. Mm-hmm. $84 million contract. The guy's broke today.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? He's broke?
Right.
It's all the dope that he was buying, the stuff that he was doing.
And that pressure does start early on. It starts in elementary school with parents, you know, everybody wanting their kid, you know, to be the best and to perform. And there is that pressure mm-hmm. Particularly with athletics, to perform at any cost, you know, that parents are willing. You know, I've seen parents, you know, that putting their kids in, insisting their kid play with injuries, sports injuries, you know, 9, 10, 11-year-olds.
Yeah, can't miss a high school game.
Yeah, so, you know, it does start young, and, you know, that's a massive shift in perception that's needed.
But how do we get that message mm-hmm. to the parents? That one in 5,000 kids are going to make professional
right.
athletes here in Rhode Island. One.
Well, I suppose it would start with the coaches, and it has to really be hammered. And I think, you know, coaches, schools, there should be very strict rules for what's allowed from parents, you know, from, you know, etiquette on the sidelines to, you know, calling coaches. And you know, there should be some boundaries and rules set because it does get out of hand. For sure.
And what kind of feedback are you getting from the people that work in the schools about what's happening in the schools? Is it a lot different now than it was 10 years ago?
Well, that's what you hear from teachers and adults, that, certain drugs are more accessible. I mean, there's some things that haven't changed from going back in terms of the use of alcohol. And marijuana to some extent, though the accessibility and acceptability of marijuana has probably made the most dramatic one of the most dramatic changes.
Right.
That and the overuse of prescription drugs. Mm. And we see that with our older adolescents. We see that with college students. You know, the farm parties where everybody, you know, dumps in their Vicodin and their Adderall and their prescription drugs, and kids just take in handfuls, and those kinds of farm parties go on at high school as well.
Mm.
They just scoop up like candy, and they don't know what they're taking. It's very dangerous. And they get those. Where do they get those drugs? Do they get them from the drug dealer No, they get them from their parents' medicine cabinet, their grandparents' medicine cabinet. You know, their prescription from when they got their wisdom teeth taken out. When my son got his wisdom teeth taken out, he got a month's supply of Vicodin for a couple of days of pain. Like, why do you need 30? Mm. But that's how many you get, with a refill. Could have gotten a refill. Mm. So, you know, and I think there is a lot of attention now being paid to that. Department of Health and Department of BHDDH are taking the lead and really looking at monitoring prescribers.
Yeah, I think they'll be moving in on some of the repeat offenders, we'll just use that word, because everything
right.
has to be done through the internet now. It's easy to track
right.
who's writing out the scripts and
right.
who's not writing out the scripts. But, you know, I look at, in conversations with the adults in my community about this particular issue, and it's very difficult to pin somebody down and say, hey, listen, do you know that there's a problem in Rhode Island? Not only in Smithfield, but Rhode Island as a whole.
Right.
We don't get any help from the news outlets. I can't tell you how many emails I sent the news outlets about this program.
Mm-hmm.
And about that they should spotlight this program. We get, right now, on this program, 6,000 hits a month on the website. You mean to tell me that doesn't send up a red flag?
Right.
Because people are dying to find out where they can help.
Get help.
Get help. for their mother, father, mm-hmm. aunt, uncle, sister, brother, grandparents. And that's another thing I want to talk about when we come back. The grandparent.
Right.
And AARP. There were flabbergasted when I spoke at their convention last October. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that when you come back. Y'all listen to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Shanta Soni. We'll be right back.
AM 790 Talk and Business. This is Recovery Radio with John Tassoni.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassoni. Sarah Dinklage is in the house. She's the executive director of Rhode Island's Student Assistance Service Program. And Sarah, again, thank you very much for joining me today. It's
My
been
pleasure.
A wealth of knowledge here on Recovery Radio. I want to talk to you about, I think it's like the third thing on your agenda, the suicide issue.
Well, suicide is the third leading cause of death among young people. It's the second leading cause of death among college 18 to 24-year-olds. And in Rhode Island, the Rhode Island Department of Health is the leader in an effort to prevent suicide by training and folks in schools. So my organization, Rhode Island Student Assistance Services, is partnering with the Department of Health, and we're trained all our student assistance counselors to in a model screening tool to assess risk for suicide. And even more importantly, we are training teachers and other people that work with youth in schools and community-based organizations to recognize the warning signs of suicide. So it's a program called QPR, Question, Persuade, Refer, and it's like CPR. It's based on the idea that anyone can be trained, it's basically an hour and a half training, to recognize the warning signs of suicide and save a life. That suicide is 100% preventable form of death, and if we train people that come in daily contact, coaches, teachers, you know, lunch ladies, bus drivers, rec centers, in recognizing the signs, we're likely to save lives. We've had all too many young people die of suicide. Last summer, between June and August, we had 5 youth suicides. 4 of them were middle school age youth, 1 was high school. And that is, you could say, a relatively rare event, but 5 young people is
too
5
many.
Too many. And so, you know, we are working closely not only with training people to recognize warning signs, but then once a youth is identified of needing a more in-depth assessment, whether they are need to be hospitalized or given immediate treatment services. We are working with Lifespan Hospitals and KidsLink Rhode Island to refer students and get them same-day appointments without having to go through the emergency room. So the idea is to really reduce unnecessary emergency room visits. And rather than sit in the emergency room and wait, where often families and youth are sent home, there's no follow-up, we're trying to get students through our partnership with Lifespan, the Department of Health, an appointment that same day at a treatment agency throughout Rhode Island, and that youth help and that family help. So it's a really needed and exciting project, and we're working with school districts and, as I said, Lifespan and the Department of Health on that project, and it's very valuable. That is really also a cornerstone of our conference that we're holding in October on upstream approaches to the behavioral health of Rhode Island youth. And the premise of this conference is really that we should not wait till people are dying of suicide, of drug overdose, not wait till they're addicted, but prevent those problems from happening in the first place, to prevent early substance use from becoming chronic and severe, to prevent use altogether, to get children and youth help for mental health problems before they attempt suicide, which we have one of the highest suicide attempt rates in the country. We have a relatively low rate of of actual suicides, but a very high attempt rate. And that is a mental, that's a healthcare issue. These young people end up in emergency rooms, in hospitals, and one we're attempting to address. So the conference, our keynote, Dr. Philip Rogers, is specifically talking about early upstream approaches to preventing suicide. And, you know, his point is we don't prevent heart attacks by giving CPR. And so there's much more we can do to prevent suicide than actual crisis intervention. The same applies for drug overdose. It's very important that we now have Narcan in more hands to prevent death, but that's not going to be the way we prevent drug overdose.
Right.
We need to start earlier. So we have an exciting lineup of speakers that day, and all of them dressing approaches that can be taken early on.
I want to go back a little bit, Sarah, pertaining to your counselors. Is suicide also part of daily routine, let's use that word, where someone can go to them?
Yes.
And it says, you know, they say to counselor, you know, I don't feel right. I'm thinking of doing X, Y, and Z.
Absolutely. We were talking earlier about the importance of relationships, and they, you know, there's been a lot of research that's demonstrated that the presence of a caring adult in a young person's life prevents a whole host of problems. And that caring adult can be an extended family member, it can be a counselor, it can be a teacher, it can be a coach, it can be a friend's parent. So by having specially trained adults in school that a young person can go to when they're thinking of killing themselves, when they're harming themselves through by cutting and other forms, or severely depressed or anxious, again, you prevent those mental health problems from becoming chronic, severe, and in need of more in-depth services. So the presence of the access, easy access to a caring, trained adult is really the key to what makes our program work.
I like that because it's, as you said, it's access. When people don't get access to something, they turn to other alternatives. And those alternatives are not always good.
Right.
When you see a young child or adolescent who has been, number one, bullied.
Right.
Which I've done a lot of work with. Transgender stuff now that's happening. Substance abuse, alcoholism. It's easy. It's an easy out for them. To do something to them that, and it's always the parents that are left with the loss,
right?
And it's very, very difficult to see a family go through that. I've been involved in a few, and it's sad. It's really sad. But I want to thank you for coming on today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Love to have you back.
Absolutely.
I'd like to have an update on your upcoming events for the school year. Mm-hmm. It would be great to have you back. You're listening to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassone. We'll see you next week.